Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. Participants include Eileen Grossman, Executive Director of Business Integrated Services at the University of Phoenix, Tracy Hardy, Project Manager at the University of Phoenix, and Maddie Lakshmanan, Project Lead of the Apollo Group, Inc. The session is entitled Managing Student Disputes Through Technology.
Good morning, everybody. University of Phoenix has developed and implemented a comprehensive enterprise system for end-to-end management of student disputes. We are really excited to be here today and to share our experiences and successes with you in how we manage disputes through technology. First, about the university. University of Phoenix was founded in 1976. And to this day, we are still largely guided by the primary principle of delivering higher education programs for working adults. Today, the university is the largest private institution in North America, with over 200 campus locations in 42 states, as well as internet delivery around the world through our online classroom modality. Excuse me. We offer more than 100 degree programs in the associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral levels, ranging from business and technology to healthcare and education, as well as certification programs. We have over 300,000 students around the globe. Nearly two-thirds of that are online students. Our students and faculty as well logs into their personal website, known as eCampus, to access their program and classroom information, as well as many other online resources to enhance their learning and teaching experience. Most institutions use these traditional choices to handle their student disputes, whether it's through your general counsel or your ombudsman's office. UOP, on the other hand, we apply a risk management strategy to meet the demands from our students. The disputes are actually handled at the campus level through our designated campus compliance officers, which are also known as CCOs. When a student is unable to reach a resolution at the campus level, they escalate their dispute to a formal grievance. The university needs to be able to provide a clear process for students to reach a resolution and comply with regulations, while be able to centrally track, manage, and administer these disputes, given that we are widely geographically dispersed. And hence, we have formed our Office of Dispute Management, also known as ODM. ODM was born and created in December of 2002. And ODM serves as that central office with a focus on overseeing and managing the resolution of both student and faculty disputes and appeals, and also balancing the responsibilities of the campuses for their students through centralized compliance monitoring and risk management. So what led to this project? ODM realized there was a need to automate the dispute management process. We also need to establish a clear submission process for our students so they know how to go about submitting a formal grievance. We also saw the need to promote consistent practices across all of our campuses for handling and resolving disputes. So all in all, the university need to deliver a rich and comprehensive system that provides the needed functionality to support our dynamic environment. So the solution came in the form of a web-based system, which is our dispute management system, which has a lot of automated features and workflow capabilities that provides end-to-end functionality to support our dispute management process. This solution that we built was born out of a partnership between University Services, which is where I and Tracy Hardy came from, and the IT division of Apollo Group, which is the parent company to UOP. I now turn this over to Tracy Hardy, who serves as the project manager from University Services, and she will share with you the key highlights and capabilities of the system that we built.
Hi, thank you for coming. I first want to share with you a quick overview of the actual project and what we did. We teamed up business owners and analysts with IT resources to first determine what was required by policy and regulation that could be automated. Then the student experience was considered, and ultimately internal processing and management of disputes was visited. In the end, we wound up with a 103-page requirements document. The delivery of the new system included various pieces of different techniques, such as traditional project management, human design elements, requirements analysis, and agile development. The project team carefully selected the components of each to meet the needs of the initiative. We feel much of the success is attributed to including different facets and having the ability to be selective with the intended scope. The dispute management system, I just wanted to put this up here to give you a high-level understanding of the flow. And let me start off with the student. We'll call him Joe the student. First, Joe goes to his campus. He has a complaint, a dispute, basically. He reports this to his campus personnel. If the campus personnel is not able to quickly resolve the dispute or feels it's quite involved and should be monitored and tracked, what that campus personnel will do is submit a link to Joe's student website so that with an online form so Joe could go ahead and complete that online and submit it into our dispute management system. Once it's in the dispute management system, the dispute management workflow begins. Basically, what happens there is it's assigned according to the campus that the student attends. Now, as Elena alluded to earlier, we have 200 different campus locations. So that is really significant piece of technology that was built to identify where the student is attending and assigning the dispute to the correct campus personnel that should be handling the dispute. Each campus has what we call an administrator identified. And the administrator is the one that is responsible for receiving the actual disputes. If that administrator is not able to resolve it, there's other campus personnel with access to the dispute management system that will be responsible for working it, and that administrator will assign it to that individual. From that point, the campus I have here on this workflow, the campus officer, could be different names, but for the sake of who it would be assigned to, the campus officer will then work the dispute. Ultimately, whoever it's assigned to and works the dispute will close it. Once it's closed, it goes to the Office of Dispute Management, as you see there referenced as ODM. They'll review it just to make sure that it was closed accurately, policies were followed, and nothing was missed, basically. And then it's resolved. And that is the actual workflow. So let me just back up a little bit and just give a little bit more detail to the actual process. Once a dispute is initiated, when an online dispute form is sent to a student, the link will stay on their website for 7 days, 7 business days. If the student does not open it within that 7 days, it'll automatically be removed. If they do go ahead and open it, complete it, they have the opportunity to save it. Save, and the save will remain for 7 days as well. And if they do just go ahead and submit, then the link does disappear as well. It's a one-time opportunity for that initial dispute. Once the form is opened by the student on their website, it's pre-populated with the student's demographic information, such as name, address, etc. When the form is complete and submitted, the workflow begins within the dispute management system. Disputes are categorized with a status, such as new, open, closed, resolved. A status changes as a result of an action. When an action is taken, an example would be a dispute in new status. When a campus administrator takes an assigned action and assigns it to a campus officer, that action will then result in a pending acceptance status. The actual status is determined on that action that's taken and will stay in the same status until another action is taken. Actions can only be taken if a user has a permission to do so, according to their predetermined role, which I'll explain next. sorry, not next, in a little bit. The workflows created are extremely valuable to ensuring appropriate controls are in place for managing and tracking disputes. All new disputes are assigned to a campus administrator for the campus in which the student attends, which I just previously mentioned. This is a key feature to ensure the responsible campus will receive the dispute. As Aline explained earlier, the volume of students that we have and the number of campuses, it's really important that it gets assigned to the correct person, not only for sensitive material that may be included with the dispute, because the students do have the ability for attachments, whatever it may be. We want to make sure the correct personnel handles it. The new system also identifies the campus that the student is attending, and it gives that campus administrator less reason to have to question if it's actually their dispute or not. Once the campus administrator does work and close the dispute and assign to the other campus personnel, that campus personnel can only perform, as I mentioned a little while ago, the actions that are assigned to them. It could be that they want to go out and get some more information from another staff within University of Phoenix. So it may stay in a certain status for a couple days. They could just go ahead and immediately work it. There's different actions they can take, but depending on what their responsibility is, it will be limited. The information that they can go out and get from other personnel that may not have access to the dispute system, they can do that by sending an email. That email can be responded to, and the body content of that email will automatically populate into the dispute system, into the notes section, so that users or personnel that do not have access as a user to the dispute system can provide information that would automatically populate. And again, that's a key feature for sensitivity reasons. Let's move on to the user permissions that I was mentioning just a minute ago. All users' abilities to perform actions within the dispute management system are controlled by permissions set within their user IDs. Those are what we call role types. The role types are determined by users' responsibility and need for specific abilities. The user's access will only allow them to perform actions on disputes that are assigned to them. However, there are role types created for senior personnel and the Office of Dispute Management that allows them to perform any action on any dispute. All actions automatically log as a memo into the system in the notes section and logs the user's ID, action, date, and time. In addition, we also have created email alerts and notifications. As with just about every job in today's world, everybody is busy, and to expect users to sign into the system every day just to see if they have something assigned to them is really not realistic. So email alerts and notifications were created. The feature not only notifies users when a dispute is assigned to them, an email will generate every day until they take action. In addition, we also created notifications to generate to senior personnel should a status remain for 10 days. It's kind of like tattletaling that a personnel is not actually working in the dispute. And there's other email alerts along those lines for senior personnel and the dispute management that kind of keeps us, you know, the users on their toes, so we ensure that we're adhering to the timeline policies for resolving disputes. Now I'm going to go ahead and allow our technology expert, Maddie, to take the floor and explain what was, and not just what was built, but how it was built.
Good morning, everyone. This is a screen of our dispute management system, and as you can see, it actually displays all the statuses that a person has, and it also has a thing called My Issues there. That when he clicks there, they would actually pretty much show what has been assigned to them, and they can actually work only on those things. But if they want to see the issues that has been assigned to other people in the campus, they can also look at office issues that would take them there, and they can also look at specific campus issues, and there are reports built for specific cases that we'll be talking later. Okay, the architecture that we use actually, we use a lot of components from different vendors to build this, and in order to assemble all these things together, we realized we need a comprehensive architecture together. And the one that we look for is we were looking for something where we can use a difference injection. What is difference injection is, these components can be wired on a configuration level rather than binding them together, rather than coupling them together. So we used a system called Spring, which actually provided there. It actually provided a very good difference injection, and also it had a concept called AOP, which stands for aspect-oriented programming. When we build a component-based architecture like what we did for dispute system, there are several things that happen across these components, like transactions. If a transaction fails in one component, we should make sure it propagates seamlessly across other components too. And the same thing with security, and the similar need is there with logging and debugging and all those things. So, and Spring offers all those things in a very nice way. So we use the Spring framework, and based on the Spring framework, we have this entire architecture. In the entire architecture, the first thing is MVC. MVC stands for Model View Controller. What it means is, we actually, the view is what the user sees. The user interacts, that's what the view is. And the controller is basically what the backend, the application, what we are doing. And so the Model View Controller pattern that we used for dispute system is called Spring MVC. That was bundled with our Spring framework, and it was developed along with Spring applications. And we used that for our dispute system. And we also used a framework called Extension.js. What that is, we actually has a real fancy application, and where we make a lot of Ajax calls, and we have a lot of, we populate or we show specific functionality in small windows. And we, in order to do that, we use this library called Extension.js, which is really good in for asynchronous programming, and it also has a real good rich widgets it has. And in the service layer, we have file services. We were given actually a tight, aggressive timeline for dispute system. So we developed a homegrown solution for this when we did this project. It actually has a real good scalability and security, but once we finish this, our company actually has another system now called Documentum, which has a real good security actually, which we are right now integrating with. What Documentum has, it has a real good security feature. The document that we put into Documentum, it shred the document into multiple pieces. So even if someone actually gets a handle on a particular piece of the document, it's useless. They need to be able to merge those documents to use the document. So it has real good security feature. And and for the keyword search, we use this library called Lucene Search Engine. There are a lot of background jobs, like Tracy was telling, the email notifications, which we use a library called Quartz library for that. For security, there are two kinds of security we always talk about. One is called authentication, another is authorization. What is authentication is telling, hey, is Maddie really an employee of Apollo Group? That is authentication. What is authorization is, hey, he's authenticated, but is he authorized to use this application? Or what permissions, what features is he capable of using? So in order for the security, for authentication, we used a system called CAS, which is actually provided by Yale University. And we actually, our company has customized that for our for Apollo Group, which we are using it. And CAP is another similar thing for authorization, where we can actually specify the role and permission that Tracy and Alain was talking about. Coming to the business, we actually, for the workflow engine that Alain and Tracy was talking about, there are different tools that is out there. One is called JBoss, JPPM, and another thing is OS workflow and things like that. But with the aggressive timeline that we got, we didn't want to implement them because and we developed a homegrown solution for that too. But we are moving to JPPM right now, and which actually has real nice features. And for the reports, we have web reports we are using. And coming to the DAO, which actually stands for Data Access Objects, And it's pretty much the way we populate the data from. And in order to get the data, we use this tool called Hibernate. What does Hibernate stand for? What does it do? It actually is an ORM tool. Most of our Java architecture so far, it actually is object-oriented programming, and database is actually relational database. So in order to bind these two things together, we use this ORM, which is like object relationship mapping. So we use this tool called Hibernate, which actually binds it together, and it creates Java objects based on the database structure for us, and which we are using it. But that we are using only for our native database like dispute system, but there are other systems inside the company, like student records, instructor records, classroom, and things like that, which we need to access in order to show the information to the user. To get that information, we use SOA calls, basically service-oriented architecture web service calls we make to get that population from. Okay, and we also do a lot of unit testing to make sure that we release a lot of different versions of our application. So whenever we release, we want to make sure the previous version is still working fine. So we do a lot of unit testing to make sure they are doing good. And we'll talk more about that in a while. So these are the technologies that we used. Like I said, the framework was Spring 2004. The latest Spring is much better, Spring 2.5, which came like 3 months back. There's a lot of good annotations in it. And we are using Spring MVC. In the view layer, we are using Extension.js. We are using Prototype.js, which is the foundation of Extension.js and jQuery and all those things, actually. And we are using JSP, Ajax, and we are using JSON. What is JSON is actually a data interchange format which we use between the server and client. So JSP, we can also use that. And we use that for Ajax purposes. And the app server, we're using JBoss. And it is actually load balanced across multiple nodes. So even if it's one is down, there are other nodes would serve the users. But we don't do session transfer and things like that at this point, which we are looking at this point. In the data layer, we're using Hibernate 3. At the database, we are using SQL Server 2000. And in the authentication, I didn't mention ACEJ before. What is ACEJ? ACEJ is a declarative way of doing the same thing what we're doing for CAS. It's basically is a way of interacting with CAS. And Spring has recently taken over ACEJ, and it has become Spring Security, which is really nice, actually. In the web service, we are using Crossfire, and Crossfire is actually... There are other tools for web services, like Access is one, Haitian, things like that. But Crossfire actually has real good performance, and it's actually the next generation web services, actually. It is actually using a streaming API, and it's not only using the SACS and DOM, like other things we're using. So it's pretty good. And the tools-wise, we're using a tool called Fortify. I'm sure all of you know all the problems the security problems that we face in the internet, and like SQL injection is one where someone can actually pass a SQL query and our application can, without realizing that a user is actually playing with your software, we can just enter it. It can delete the whole dispute system. So things like that are there, and the things like we may release some bugs without we realizing it, and there are other security bugs like cross-site scripting, things like that. And Fortify is one tool our company has licensed with, which actually lists all these things. It actually uses a tool called FindBugs, which is inbuilt and was, I believe that was also made by Yale University. I'm not too sure. But Fortify is a tool that our company has, which would find all those security problems and does static analysis for us. And the QTP script is actually... as I was telling, we have a 2 weeks release cycle. Every 2 weeks, we release a new version of our software. And between our version releases, we check our regression testing. And QTP is a software that we use for that testing. And LoadRunner is what we use to do performance testing. When I say performance testing, what happens if 100 users use the application? What happens if University of Phoenix extends to like Asia and China and Russia? How can the application handle all the load? And a load runner would find the information for us, and we can see if our application is scalable enough. And the library is Quart that I was mentioning before. So some of the technological challenges that we faced when we developed this are, like, as I was telling, the data that present in the dispute system, they're pretty legal, and that cannot be shown to people outside the system. But at the same time, the student community who's making the complaint, they should be able to report the issue, but they cannot see other things in the application. So it was a conflicting requirement that we had. So like Alain was mentioning before, the student actually has an application called eCampus where they can go and see the classroom. So we started providing a portal there for the student to create an issue. So through that, they create the issue. From there, we, through a web service call, we brought that to our dispute system. That was one conflicting requirement we had. The second thing that Tracy mentioned was outside users. Like, there are four players of this dispute system. One is CCO, who is like the campus guy, and there's a campus administrator, and there's a regional administrator, and there is also what is called ODM. Sometimes these four people need the counsel of other people outside this, who's a regular users of application. They go and seek their advice. So when they go and seek their advice, how do we make sure that we authenticate them, we authorize those external users, which is very important because of the nature of the data. Also that, assume I sent an email to Mr. Richard for some information. He can just forward that email to another person, Mr. Joe, and he can actually access the same data. So we should be able to make sure Joe should not be able to access the data. So the way we did it, we developed a custom authorization for that. Outside of a regular CAS and CAP, we did authentication through CAP, but we developed a custom authorization for those things. That was really nice. And the other technical challenge that we had was the ODM staff. They are actually like a super god users of, I would say, like, they can do pretty much what they want inside the application. Let's assume I'm using the software, I'm working on a particular dispute. Another ODM staff can come and can log in, and he can start doing things without realizing I'm also working on the same dispute. That is a requirement that we got. And so we have to make sure that if one person uses it, if other person updates it, we should be able to either alert them or we should be able to roll them back. So we started locking them, and that's a locking feature that we developed for such requirements that we had. And one of the main thing that we want to see is we did something called contextual inquiry to see what the users are really doing, why they want a new software. One of the reasons they really need a new software is because they are actually communicating with a lot of other entities inside the Apollo group, and they're kind of like, they have to go here, they have to go there. And one thing that we want to achieve is we want to make sure the communication goes down. And so that's, we bring all the communication of external entities into GMS, into dispute system as much as possible, so they don't depend on other things. And we secure the data really good. And one of the way we do, as I was telling you before, we use this Fortify report, which takes care of SQL injection, cross-site scripting, all those security problems. And also, our data is actually behind multiple firewalls, so no one can access it except through our application, which is also authenticated and authorized through CAS and CAP. And how do we? And also, we also went to the extent of, I may be using the application, but by mistake, let's say I go for a coffee break, leaving my computer on, there could be some sensitive information that could be seen on the screen, which a person who's just walking by, he can see it. We won't avoid that. So when we developed the UI, we were very particular. There are things like collection status, which we are showing the screen. We want to really make sure you just cannot see it. And you have to click a particular button, or we went to the extent of thinking all those things, making sure the data is really secure from all things. And how do we back up the secure data? In our company, what we do is every 15 minutes, we back up the transactional data. And so anytime the data is lost, we can build it. And every day we make the backup of the entire database, and also we have another duplicate copy we are making every 6 hours, and that is being used for report purpose. And how do we monitor our application availability? The way we do it, every 5 minutes we have a homegrown solution which basically logs in to see if the application is up and running. It just do some static testing to see if some text is present, some data is there, things like that. It just do some static testing, but we make sure that the users will never be affected, because one of the requirement is that the user should be able to finish a dispute in 14 days. If they're not able to finish in 14 days, it's a legal problem for the company, and so that means the application has to be up and running every minute. So we are checking it by doing this monitoring. What we display shown so far is what we have done so far, but the future direction is much exciting. Our company not only has this dispute system, it actually has two more dispute systems. The other one it has is called classroom issue tracking, where a lot of students can complain, hey, the faculty is actually not giving feedback on time, he's actually not attending the class correctly, things like that. There are a lot of things. And the second dispute system that we have is called academic violation tracker, where a faculty can tell, hey, the student is actually plagiarizing my class, he's misbehaving in my class, and things like that. And one of our future direction to see if we can consolidate all these three dispute systems into one. The reason we want to do that is, let's assume someone comes to this dispute system, which is used by ODM, who's actually at the companies they work on the escalated issues. They need to see if there are other disputes from the same student prior to coming here. And if they are coming, what was the history of those disputes? They should be able to see that, which they're already doing it by sending manually the faxes and everything, which we will avoid by building this humongous system, and where they can actually see the prior data very easily. And when we are building the prior data, we also get some more advantages. Retaliatory issues. Sometimes the faculty could be telling the student is actually plagiarizing, but the student could actually feel bad about it, and he could make a complaint back, a fake complaint against the faculty. So to see how this pattern all when we build this consolidated system, we can see all that. Retaliatory issues and load balancing. What's happening is we are actually paying all these managers and supervisors just to distribute the issues and tasks among people, which we feel we can do a much better job if the software can do the load balancing, and if someone is actually out of office, we can actually take the issues out of them and we can assign to other people. All those automatic way of doing things, which we are looking at right now, called load balancing, and which our new application will do that. And finally, we can do a lot of trending to see whether our application can predict how the disputes were, and is there any pattern from a faculty complaint? Is the faculty complaining on a similar background, things like that? We can make some trending and things like that. So thank you very much, and I'll pass to Alain.
Thank you, Matty. So as you can see, the joint collaboration between University Services and Apollo IT afforded us the development of this rich and robust system with all the proper regulatory and user access controls to ensure data and record integrity. The next slide, just want to give you just a feel for the various on-demand reports that are available from our system, primarily for monitoring purposes, and so we can also do some trend analysis. And that ends our presentation. Thank you for attending our presentation. I'd like to open it up for any questions. In the meantime, I'd like to give you our contact information should you have any other questions or inquiries that you would like to contact any of us after today. Any questions? Yes. The question is the PowerPoint available in the EDUCAUSE website? The answer is yes. The question is, what volumes do we get on the student disputes? Do you have any of that information? Maddie, would you like to address?
We have like 14,000 issues for the last 4 years.
Okay, the question is regarding the nature and classification of the disputes and the action taken accordingly.
The nature of the disputes can be anything a student has a problem with. And then what the officers actually do is go in and categorize them, and that categorization happens when they're accepting the dispute. So if it's assigned to an individual, before they can actually accept it, they have to pick a category. And the categories range from academic to financial to classroom. There's a whole list, but it's dependent on what it truly is. If it's like something that a student says, I don't like that you charge this, that's not financial. Financial is something that's truly affecting their actual true dollars. And the process for identifying that is that person, that officer. They make that judgment call. And in the end, when the Office of Dispute Management actually reviews the complaint to make sure that it was closed properly and handled correctly, they'll actually determine, does that category actually fit? Was that the correct one? And those categories basically identify who should or shouldn't handle it, because if it's a high sensitive category, we also have an additional subcategory for which we call informal or formal complaints that would warrant a higher level of officer to handle those type of disputes. And then in the end, help with the reporting and trending analysis.
I just want to add to that a little bit. We made the categories very specific. What happens is sometimes the student may say, I want a money back, and we can categorize that as a financial issue. But is it really a financial issue? Sometimes it is not, because he's telling that the faculty is not teaching correctly or the course material is not good enough. So we make it financial, but then we have to be more specific. So we use something called secondary issue types, where we actually specify more at a more granular level what the problem is, and then we actually have a chance of recategorizing too a little later. So that's something we do.
Other questions? Okay, well, thank you again, and please feel free to contact any of us if you have any other additional questions. Thank you.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Stream multi-format audio and video to PCs and mobile devices with Helix Server from Real. Information at realnetworks.com.